within a phylogenetic context, and of course this requires collaborations between systematists and ecologists, and in particular a real need for species level or even lower phylogenies is needed so we can really start to map a lot of these really interesting ecological interactions onto these phylogenies. So with that, I'd like to stop and take any questions. Yeah, I mean, for a lot of specialist parasitoids, they often use host plant volatiles and cues in order to facilitate host location. So it could be sort of a moving target where, and as I saw in a recent talk, a lot of these parasitoids are even capable of learning. So where they're finding hosts may determine where they're going to look for hosts. And so the relative abundance, it could be sort of a frequency-dependent thing where it's moving in time and space, and that may be even promoting some of this diversification. So we really don't know. I mean, most of these specialist parasitoids are finding the hosts they're finding their caterpillar hosts on an array of host plants. So it's and they have very different chemistries. So it's really hard to imagine that there's a unified cue that's linking, you know, all these different host plants. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, so the data from Hawkins suggests that concealed feeders get nailed very highly. So especially leaf miners have some of the highest parasitism rates. And because they're somewhat advertising their location, they're kind of constrained in their ability to escape. So all of these guys that we're working on are exposed feeders, but they have a lot of adaptations that sort of could inhibit their detection by a lot of generalist predators. So I think it could be a lot of trade-offs between, say, parasitoids, which are really good at attacking concealed feeders, and generalist predators, which may be deterred or not able to even locate these concealed feeders. So, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Somebody's going to get just everywhere. That's pretty much my experience. So.
Okay, we're going to have to move on. I want to thank John again for excellent.
Intragroup prey will have to be a superior competitor than biocontrol agent 2. In other words, biocontrol agent 1 will have to be much better in exploiting the pest, controlling the pest in this case. So if that is true, then the negative impact of predation from biocontrol agent 2 on biocontrol agent 1 actually prevents biocontrol agent 1 from exercising the potential maximum control on the pest. Thus, in other words, biocontrol agent 2 has an indirect positive effect on the pest, releasing it from predation from biocontrol agent 1. And this translates into a negative impact on the crop, and overall, the general theory is that intragroup predation disrupts biocontrol. However, that may not always be the case, as was shown by a recent paper by Rudolph, in which an intragroup predation with a self-limiting intragroup prey, perhaps through mechanism like cannibalism or territorial, if that self-limiting, the strength of that self-limiting mechanism is as strong or stronger than the predation impact from biocontrol agent 2, then the predation impact becomes negligible and there is no longer any indirect positive effect on the pest from biocontrol agent 2, and this results in a net positive effect on the crop. So this model of intragroup predation of a self-limiting prey predicts that having intragroup predation would improve biocontrol. So now we have two competing hypotheses or models of the effects of intragroup predation on biocontrol, one that disrupts and one that improves biocontrol. And because intragroup predation is so prevalent in most, if not all, agroecosystems, it becomes important to investigate these two models thoroughly. And that is what I did in my study system, using cotton as my crop And the two pests I studied were the two spotted spider mite, Tetranychus urticae, which is a foliage feeder and it damages plant vigor. The other pest was the plant bug, Lycus hesperus, which feeds on the cotton flower buds and fruits, and it causes abortion of those reproductive structures. The first biocontrol agent in my system is the big eye bug, Jacaris pallens. And the intragroup predator in this case was the assassin bug, Xerus renardi. So the specific questions I asked were, how would the addition of an intragroup predator affect the abundance of the intragroup prey, the intermediate biocontrol agent here, and how does it affect the biocontrol of the pest, and how does it affect the crop itself? So to answer these questions, I conducted a field experiment over this past summer in Davis, using field cages with one cotton plant per cage. I had four treatments. My plant treatment had just the cotton plant in the cage, and to the herbivore treatment, I added the two types of herbivores. To Jacaris treatment, I added Jacaris and the herbivores, and to the Xerus treatment, I added all components of my intragroup predation system. I did a final sampling in August, so the whole experiment ran for about 2.5 months, giving enough time for the spider mites and the insects to generate multiple generations, except for the top predator, Xerus. So I'm going to show I'm going to present all my results using histograms, with the vertical bars representing the mean value with standard error, and any vertical bar linked above by a red horizontal line indicate that there was no significant differences between those treatments. So on this slide, I'm showing the effects of Xerus on Jacaris, with the y-axis being the mean value of Jacaris in the cages, including eggs, nymphs, and adults. So although Xerus was a predator in the cages of Jacaris, having them in the cages did not significantly decrease the number of Jacaris. But what's more surprising is if you piece apart the population structure of Jacaris and just look at the adult females itself, after 2.5 months and with abundant food in the cages, as I'll show later, the N abundance of adult females did not differ significantly from the initial number that added into the cages, which was 2. So somehow, the population of the Jacaris adult females did not increase. And if we shift and look at the effects on the pest, neither of the biocontrol agents have had any significant control on spider mite, and thus we did not see any benefits in terms of plant dry weight to the plant. But the biocontrol effects were different for Lycus. And here we can see that although Jacaris did decrease the number of Lycus, it had some degree of control, but it was not significantly different from just the herbivore treatment only. But once we added in the intragroup predator, Xerus, the biocontrol on Lycus became significant, and this improvement in biocontrol of Lycus translated into an improvement in the flower bud retention for the plant. So, in short, the key point of the results here was that adding an intragroup predator into my system improved biocontrol of Lycus, and it translated into improvement of the cotton plant itself. So for the discussion, I would like to draw your attention to the surprising result that Jacaris numbers remain low, the adult female numbers remain low, despite, if you just look at the Jacaris only treatment, there was abundant food in terms of spider mites and Lycus inside the cages, and there were no natural enemies in those cages, but Jacaris adult females did not increase after 2.5 months. And having Xerus in the cages also did not decrease the number of Jacaris adult females from the initial number that put into the cages. So the data from this slide itself, if we fit it into the second model that I presented earlier, it seems that it fit the model really well, where Jacaris pallens is self-limiting. So after 2.5 months and with abundant food, the adult females did not increase. And because it was so self-limiting, the predation impact from Xerus was negligible, and thus we did not see any negative impact from Xerus on the abundance of Jacaris pallens. And a lot parallel to the predictions of this model, we saw an improvement in biocontrol of Lycus and an overall improvement of the cotton plant quality. So my experiment provided an empirical support for this model that was presented by Rudolph in a recent paper. So to conclude, we showed that, at least in my experiment, spider mites were not controlled by Jocoris and Zealous, and adding Zealous with Jocoris improved biocontrol of ligus and also improved the cotton plant quality. And in contrast to the general theory of intragroup predation, which says that intragroup predation is disruptive to biocontrol, I would argue that if the intragroup prey is self-limiting, intragroup predation may be beneficial to biocontrol itself. But to reinforce these points, I will have to do much more research to investigate the possible self-limiting mechanisms in Jocoris population and to look for complementarity in the foraging behaviors of Jocoris and Zealous. And with that, there are many other people who I would like to thank, but their names are not here. But thanks a lot to these people, and thank you for your attention. Thanks. I guess I should say I can take questions now. Yes? Well, was your question that Zealous preferred ligus over Jocoris? Well, first, I'm not exactly sure if they do prefer ligus over Jocoris. I really can't say that. If I don't think there were any experiments that chose like a prey choice between Jocoris and ligus for Zealous. But ligus adults are bigger than Jocoris, and the Zealous is a sit and wait predator, so most of the time it will just be still and then it will wait for the prey to come along. And Zealous hang out, well, my personal observation was that Zealous will hang out much more on the ends of the leaves.